We got a great night planned this evening. As some of you would know, if you've been here the last few weeks, we've been talking about what's it look like to be a gospel community. So not just individually transformed by God and his work in Jesus, but what's it look like when all of us together are experiencing that transformation and are walking together in that. And so Jeff Norris started us out on week one, you'll remember, with just sort of the big vision. What happens when a community is transformed by the gospel? And then I got to speak second week, and we talked about how does that then transform the way we speak within the community and to those around the community? How does that transform us together? And then last week we heard from Daryl Ford and talked about how the gospel transforms us as a community in the ways that we relate to justice. And so we're really privileged to have Randy Pope with us tonight. Randy is our lead teacher here at Perimeter Church. And so come on up, Randy, and what we're going to do is have a little conversation this evening. Yeah, you can clap. That's allowed. I'm sure he just loves it when you clap, but no? Not your thing? Wouldn't have guessed. Hey, thank you so much for being here.
Good
with
to be
us.
Here.
Yeah,
good to be
really,
here.
I know I speak for everybody here, just saying we're really, really excited to have you. So, what we want to talk about a little bit tonight was in terms of when Jesus really starts changing us as a community, he starts changing the ways that we interact with one another and with those outside and the ways we're speaking, our conversations, et cetera. He makes us sharers, makes us communicators of his good news. And so part of that means that individually, we need to have some preparation. We need to have confidence to be able to share the story of Jesus. And so I'm going to brag on you just a little bit. I know you don't love that, but I've learned so much in my 12 years of being here at Perimeter from this man. And specifically in terms of how to have conversations about Jesus, how to have gospel conversations with folks who don't embrace him yet, how to build relationships, etc. So I really don't believe you could hear from someone better on this topic this evening. So we're really, really privileged to have you here. So
thank you.
First off, a lot of us here are new, maybe haven't even attended a service at Perimeter. So I thought it'd be good just to start off with a little bit of introduction. You're not just our lead teacher, you're our founding pastor. Mm-hmm. You started this, what, 5 or 6 years ago?
It's been at least that long.
At least that long.
Be 40 years ago. 40 years this next June, so yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it was, you just walked into this place, and this facility was all just waiting for you, and exactly like
that. Just like this.
Yeah, right. I'll stop with the sarcastic question, sorry. But tell us a little bit about those early days, what was it, 77, I guess, when we were first starting out. What was it like? I know we do a sort of a taste of Perimeter. So as you're coming into the church and seeing if you want to make it your church home, it's a great opportunity to hear the story. Give us a taste of Perimeter.
Well, to make it very, very brief, great challenge I received from an incredible, godly Christian leader, one of the greatest, I think, in the world, a worldwide ministry, in fact, but he challenged with the thought, attempt something so great for God, it's doomed to failure lest God be in it. And that was the statement that kind of caught my heart. Attempt something so great for God, it's doomed to fail lest God be in it. And wow, what would that be? And in a long dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of hours alone with the Lord and a pad in my lap, I began to sense God's leading as to what I should do with my life, this, that, and the other. And it was to plant a church, which was, by the way, the furthest thing from my desire or thought or anything. I'll give you this funny little anecdote. Nobody knows this story much, but about, I don't know, this year, I went to Carol, my wife, and I said, Carol, there's something I'm looking for out of my high school days. You know, where in the world would something from high school days be? She said, in the closet, da-da-da-da. And so I go, okay. Now, I've been telling her forever that I love doing what I do. I'm honored to do what I do. But there are a couple of things in my job that I don't like. One is preaching, and the other is pastoring. Are you following that? Those are a fairly big part of what I should be doing, if you get my drift there. And why has God got me here doing this? But she said, "It's in a. You might find it in a scrapbook your parents put together. I remember that I got this scrapbook. I hadn't seen it since high school, if I ever saw it then. And I'm flipping through, kind of intrigued. And I found this fold-out, which is not what I was looking for, but I found this fold-out. This is before computers now. So here's this fold-out, and it has 40 different occupations. It has all these dots and X's and, you know. And then over here, it has 40 numbers. And I don't know if the highest number could be 50 or if it was 100, but my highest number, this was a career assessment that you took out of high school to determine what should you major in, what should you do, you know, whatever. So here it is. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I see my highest number, 46. And I go across and it says, physician. Well, I'd really thought about being in the medical world. That's what I was kind of headed initially. So I could see that. Next one, lawyer. How about that? Lawyer. I love to argue things that I believe in. So I could see me being a decent lawyer. And I go through about four of them and finally say, okay, what's this? Yeah. So I go down and go, oh, an 8, my lowest number by quite a bit. 8, pastor. I sat there and I laughed. I said, God, you got the greatest sense of humor. But it truly was something doomed to failure for me to be a pastor. And particularly, we came here with no money, had 10 bucks when we landed here. If you've been to Taste of Primitive, you've heard that story. And had a 2-month-old and didn't know how in the world, didn't have one contact. So it was just I have to trust God and attempt something doomed to fail lest he be in it. And God's blessed.
Yeah. Yeah, he really has.
And you moved here when you were 25, right?
25.
Right in this age range.
Yeah.
There are times that I walk around and just think, a 25-year-old. It's amazing.
Well, that came a little bit of a time.
A little bit
over
of time.
A lot
little
of
bit
years.
Of a time. Yeah. 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 True story. Well, you know, one thing that I'll just continue for a second. Just you hear stories throughout the years as you're here of just ways that God's had an impact on various folks around here through Randy as a pastor, as a preacher, as one who shared the gospel. So I've gotten to hear just little stories along the way. Plenty of you have probably heard them as well. Ways that God's used Randy, whether it's back in his hometown or in college years or then here at Perimeter as well. And so one interesting tidbit is that I am here because of the ministry of Randy Pope in sort of a roundabout way. So when Randy was in college, he had the privilege of investing in a guy named Walter Wood. Walter ended up going into ministry himself, good friend of yours, and that took him up to West Virginia, of all places. I mean, who goes to West Virginia? Let's be honest, right? And he was able to share the gospel and lead some folks to Christ, disciple some folks up there that were my parents' best friends in the world. And they started a little church, and I came to faith there. And so when I moved down to Atlanta, my pastor from home said, hey, I've heard great things about Perimeter Church if you happen to end up close. And I just happened to drop in Duluth, and God's done some crazy things in my life since then as well. So
I've
thanks.
Never heard that story. That is,
yeah,
I'm gonna be
it's
with
wild
Walter.
Stuff.
I'm gonna be with Walter next week.
Huh? Yeah,
yeah. How about that? So,
well, let's talk a little bit about this stuff of becoming prepared and confident gospel communicator. I have a few notes of just things I want to be sure to ask you.
Okay.
One thing is just the word missional. Just to start off, you hear it so much if you're around churches or ministries at all. I feel like I've heard various different definitions from different folks. When we use it, we talk about doing missional discipleship. We talk about being missional as a community here. What do you mean when you use that
phrase? Very simple. I can say it very easily. Being missional is living a life that takes on the mission of Jesus. Simple as that. What did Jesus do? You read the scriptures, it's easy to determine. He did two things. He, first of all, he preached and he healed, right? Those are the two things he did. He preached and he healed. And that's where we get the words word and deed. We give the word to people and we do deeds that serve people to aid them, to enable them to listen to the word. People, if I've got plenty of water, and you're there thirsty, dying of thirst, just literally dying of thirst. And I say, boy, I got the greatest news for you. I got the greatest news for you about how you can go to heaven. You go, I need some water. Nah, you don't need the water. Listen to me. You've lost your case right there. So hand them some water and then say, by the way, I got some great news for you. So the two go together, and that's the way Jesus did. So it's just taking on the mission of Jesus.
Yeah. What do you think, just in a practical sense, a little bit, for maybe 20-somethings that are early in career, et cetera, you know, maybe landing in a new city, what's that maybe look like practically, you think? Maybe a couple thoughts.
Well, the first thought I have is I think you need to take pressure off. I really do. I think that you look at a story of someone, all right, I come to Atlanta, and this is why God uses me to do this, that, and the other, and why didn't God use me in that way? Well, God's going to use you in a way he doesn't use me, but the point it is, we're all different people. I think one of the marvels of what God did with me is I'm an introvert, and usually you find people who are going to be more extroverted to do that, so I've had to overcome a few things to be able to, you know, but we are who we are, and we've got to be who we are. We can't be somebody else. We can't try to, but we just say, God, here I am, and I think the great, see, people would look at where I am and what I do now, and they would think, boy, that's an amazing man. Talk to my kids. Talk to my wife. Amazing man, very average man in most every way. I have an average intellect, and in my opinion, at best. I mean, what I've learned to communicate, I've had to learn that hard. I have a terrible self-esteem. I will put it this way, not a terrible, I have a poor self-esteem in terms of communicating and speaking. You go, really? Well, you do it, it's so easy. You can, well, what happened was when I got here at 25 and I'd done a lot of speaking, God had used me in a lot of ways, starting campus ministries where I was in, at Alabama and other places. But when I got in the pulpit at 25, I got beat up so bad by people that told me everything I did wrong in speaking. You didn't do, you don't do this, you got your hand in your pocket, you're not energetic enough, you don't get me excited enough, you don't do enough, And I was kind of intrigued because I knew that, but I kept seeing all these lives changing and people keep coming and it's growing. I go, wonder why? You know, I'm not that good. I'm just, you know, everybody's confirming I'm no good. So it's like the person who's told by her father all of her life, you're ugly, you're ugly, you're ugly. And she may be the most beautiful woman in the world, but when she looks in the mirror, she's ugly. That's all she sees is ugly. So that's one of the great gifts God's given me is a sense of great humility about my speaking. I mean, I never walk out and go, wow, well, you did a good job, Randy, thank you. I don't do that. I go, I just don't see it that way. So in many, many respects, I think the beauty is watching. See, when you don't have much to offer, that's when God, I think, does the greatest things. At least when you see yourself as not having much to offer. I'll put it at least that way. Now, God gives gifts, a lot of gifts here and doesn't here, and that's his business. But I think we get a mindset that says, if I'm really this, and I've got a lot of this, and I'm really good at this, and I've got this kind of this, then God can really use me. The truth of this, when God really uses that guy or that girl, they usually crash somewhere along the way. But when you sit there and say, but me, I'm just a mm-mm, and God goes, you know what, I use you. You're a safe bet to give me the glory. You'll give me glory because you just don't think it's you. You think it's something that God's doing through you. So I'm just saying, pressure off, be you. Try to tempt things doomed to fail, ask God to be in it. You know, ask God to use you in big ways. But at the same time, you know, if you feel like, how could he? I'm not good. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the people God knocks the ball out of the park with. I have a mentor, a man that mentored me. His name is Frank Barker. He's now in his late 80s. But Frank, pastors, I think until, I would say my entire coming up years of life, the greatest church I'd ever seen. The healthiest, the best, in every respect, great church. Big, big church, too. And I bet I've had 40 friends over the years when he'd be preaching in Birmingham, Alabama, and they'd say, hey, Randy, that guy you keep talking about, Barker guy, what church is it? I'm going to be over in Birmingham working. I'm going to be over the weekend. I'll go to church there. Oh, good. Go hear Frank. And I look so forward to them coming back. And this is what they say. They say, I went to Briarwood. I said, well, good. What'd you think? Pretty impressive church and all the stuff that God's doing there. Pretty impressive. And I said, well, good. How did you get to stay for the worship service? Oh, yeah, I was at the worship service. Did you hear Frank speak? And he said, this is what I hear every time. Yeah, I did. And I kind of was well into the service before I ever believed that was the guy you've been talking about. Now, it's the Frank Barker you're talking about, right? I go, yeah, yeah. He wasn't that impressive, was he? He said, not really. He really wasn't very impressive. And I said, well, let me ask you this question. Did God use his message in your life? Yeah. Yeah, he really did. I was kind of shocked because he didn't impress me much. But boy, I don't know, God did something. I go, okay, good enough. I say, there's the greatest compliment a pastor ever gets. When he goes, you ain't that impressive, but God's using you somehow. Good, good.
Yeah, that's good. That's encouraging and freeing. That's really good to hear. Yeah.
Do you know that? At just about every week when I leave the church, we get in the car, and I don't even know if Carol's being honest, but she'll say, hey, boy, God used you. That was good. And I say, you know what? I haven't heard one word from one person. I must have talked to 40 people. You know, I said, Carol, let me ask you something. If you were speaking to a ladies' group and you spoke your heart out and you did whatever, and after it ended, you stopped and immediately you spoke to 40 people and none of them ever even alluded to your talk, would you feel that maybe you missed the mark a little bit? And she said, yes. That's been my life for years. And I'm not inviting anybody to come up and do that. I think it's good. I mean, it's a great blessing because I can leave every week thinking, I think I missed that one. Surely someone would have said something, you know. And then the next week I hear all these stories about what God did here and the stories come in and this, that, and the other. Not to me, but I hear people go, okay, let me tell you. And I go, God did use that. I would have never known that. So if you don't see the response, don't worry. That's good. Just keep plugging, and I think God says, you're giving me the glory.
That's great. It reminds me of, I feel like I heard you say something a while back of just thinking about success in this realm of sharing our faith having to do more with faithfulness than fruitfulness necessarily.
Fruitfulness never should be the issue. And now, if somebody can point out to you that you're doing things that really is hindering fruitfulness, oh yeah. But in terms of, yeah, no, seems like I'm faithful. You're faithful. That's all you do. You're just faithful. Mm-hmm. Not how many people came to Christ. How many people were you faithful to share and love and help and try to, that's all we do. I heard this definition years ago by the man who started CRU, used to be Camps Crusade for Christ, said, a successful witness is sharing Christ in the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving the results up to God. It's a great definition. Mm-hmm. Okay, I did that. Did anybody come to Christ? I don't know. But
yeah, that's good. So in terms of faithfulness, part of that is wanting to be prepared. I've heard several guys through the years, big name fellas from, you know, sort of different traditions, say things like, you know, gosh, once Christ changed your life, you've got it. You don't really need to worry about getting trained. And we think that's crazy around here. One of the best things I think we do is train and talk about what's it look like to share your faith, to share the work of Jesus. So let's just talk about that a little bit. You talk about a few different things, you know, proper mindset, usable tool set, identifiable workshop. What's it look like when somebody gets the proper mindset in terms of of sharing their faith, sharing Jesus?
Well, proper mindset is that we're ambassadors. What does an ambassador do? Ambassador takes orders from the kingdom that that ambassador represents, and the head of that kingdom would be a king. So you, in a king-oriented, you know, nation, you'd say, okay, I take my orders from the king. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm an ambassador, I am representing the king. That's what it is. It's basically saying, okay, I'm going to be faithful, and I'm going to take the message that he tells me. Now, when you have the right mindset, it is, I am an ambassador. I got that mindset. I'm not just waking up tomorrow going, okay, I'm a student. Okay, I'm a young adult. Okay, I'm a 50-year-old businessman. Okay, no, you're not a businessman. You're an ambassador who happens to be a businessman. You're an ambassador who happens to be you're an ambassador. There's the mindset. Mm-hmm. Now, the ultimate mindset is ready to die. Mm. There it is. I'm ready to die. That's the mindset. Do you know that the missionaries, or I should say the pastors, the church planters, that went to Geneva to be trained as church planters, seminary and church planting, in the days of Calvin? Do you know that the likelihood of living past 2 years was something like 20%? It was the probability you would be martyred within the first 2 years of planting a church. Wow. They were going into France to plant churches, and it was just deadly to do that. But they had all these people going in. Well, now, if you looked at our country back years ago, my parents' generation, people were flooding in. I mean, just volunteering. Let me go into World War II. Let me go fight for our country. Let me go fight. Yeah, but you're probably going to, there's a good chance you're going to die. I know that. It doesn't matter if I die. That's a mindset that says, I got to fight. I got to fight. But you may get killed. Well, that's not the issue. It's, I got to fight for my country. And the mindset is this: I would rather fight for the birth of lost people, or in this case, the church planters, for the birth of the church, than I would for me to live. Mm. Better I die and the church live than me live and the church not be born. Now, that's a mindset right there. And that's why so many missionaries in the early days of this country, when they would, the primary mission field was Africa at that time, and what they'd do, they packed all their goods, you probably heard it, in coffins, because they never would come back. So they said goodbye to all their family, their friends. Goodbye. There they go. That's a mindset.
Yeah. That's a huge first step then.
Yeah.
Getting your mindset right.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about death. The hardest death is not dying physically. It's really dying to yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's the real death. We all have to die. Mm-hmm. But what if it embarrasses me when I talk? What if I get rejected? What if? Okay, we'll die.
Yeah, that's good. And then, you know, moving from mindset then into the tool set, we're reading a book together as a staff team right now. There's a couple of guys that are former Navy SEALs that are talking about leadership, and we read them just a little introduction, and these guys get in a bad situation, and they react just immediately. They know what to do, and one of the things that stuck out to me was that I've known a couple guys that are SEALs over the years, and you don't get there to just react with the exact right reaction. If you haven't trained quite a bit, if you haven't prepared quite a bit. And so, you know, I think of this, you know, you talked about having to learn hard the way to communicate. And that the tool set kind of comes in there. You talk about a usable tool set. So what's that mean when you get into that part?
Yeah, I think if you have the right mindset, but you don't have the tools, you're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. Of course, you have the tools, no mindset, you're not going to do it either. But tools, I think every believer should have three buckets of tools. I like to think of it as three buckets. And you need a primary tool in each bucket. And the more tools you want to add to the bucket, that doesn't matter, but you got to have a primary tool that you're going to go to. It's your go-to tool in each of the three buckets. Here are the three buckets. You got invitation, which is an important bucket. That means I need some means to be able to invite people to come with me to something. What am I going to take people to? Am I going to take them to the 20s? Am I going to take them to church? Am I going to take them to a Bible study? Am I going to take them to a home group? Am I going to take them to a service project that's in the community? What am I going to take these non-Christians to expose them? Because, see, the great, you know, we're to be fishermen of men, right? Everybody agrees. Jesus said, follow me, I will make you fishers of men. Well, fishermen, they have bait. Well, think of a two-hooked lure. And the two-hooked lure, number one, exposure to God's word. Number two, exposure to God's people. So you need to be able to invite people to say, where am I inviting people to? Well, I don't invite people. Well, then you're probably not going to be very effective as a fisherman because you don't even have a tool in the first bucket. So find what that tool is. That's why we're ramping up again on IF, investigative forums around here, and just opportunities where you can bring people. This is a great place to bring people, you know. So that's bucket number one is invitation. Bucket number two is literature. You need some piece of literature that you can carry with you, inexpensive enough that you can afford to say, here. And thinking that if they read this, there is a good chance they're going to get intrigued. That's why I wrote the little book that now is our tool as a church, our primary tool, called The Answer. You don't have to like to read it because it's just 80-something pages. The pages are little. And there's even a lot of diagrams. So it's kind of, you know, even men read it. I always say even men will read it. So, but... oh, my goodness. What we're seeing as a result of that, you know, we didn't publish it so we can keep it so cheap. So, because if you publish it, then I have to buy it. Everybody buys the same, and it's real expensive. But if you don't publish, then you can keep it really, really cheap, whatever it costs to just, you know, print it. So anyway, we haven't ever done that. Do you know out of our church, it's the only place, now you can go online, obviously, and get it, but the only store that sells it is Perimeter Church, our bookstore. Do you know that there have been given away now more than 50,000 of those things? That shows our church has a tool. They found their tool. And so it doesn't have to be that one, but find you a literature. Mm-hmm. The third bucket is investigation. You need a plan to help people investigate the gospel. It's the greatest word in evangelism to me is investigate. If you try to tell people the gospel, don't count on much happening. If you want to invite somebody, would you like to investigate? Oh, my. For instance, I'll just whet your appetite a little bit, okay? I'll give you a couple of stories. Now, I'm not sure everybody in this room would know the name that I am referring to here. I'm not going to use the name. But it is a professional athlete, and I will assure you every male in this group would, and most female would know this name of this athlete. Now, we're talking world class, maybe the best in their particular sport. And that person's agent called me and said, would you meet with him because his life is somewhat unraveling in the midst of all of his success? He needs some real truth. Now, his agent, a friend of mine who is a really strong Christian but did not feel equipped and prepared to do it. So he said, I want to get you to meet with him. I said, well, does he want to meet with me? Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I said, he doesn't, does he? Well, he wants to because I want him to, so he's willing to do it. I said, well, I don't meet with people who don't want to meet with me. Well, Randy, don't do that. He's already said he'd meet with you, so you need to do it. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. So he said, let me call him back. So he calls him back, and he says, he wants to meet. He called me and said, I called him back. He wants to meet with you. I said, you're lying to me, aren't you? No. Well, he was lying to me. So anyway, so he said, you're going to meet at this club, and this is da-da-da, and told me all about him. He said, this guy will blow you off if you're not careful. So, you know, so I kind of walk in, and... obviously, I know who he is, and he's sitting by himself, and so I walk up, and he looks up at me, does just like that. Now, would you look forward to talking to that guy? So I walk up, and I said, I'm so-and-so. He said, Steve told me. I said, you don't want to meet with me, do you? Nope. Good. they would, let's do. You tell Steve anything you want. You can lie to him. You can tell him we met, we had a good meeting. We, you know, I don't care. But I told him I would not meet with you unless you wanted to. He lied to me. I'm sorry. See you later. So I turned around like this, and he goes, no. You're here. Sit down. I said, I don't do it if you don't want to. No. Sit down. So what do you do when he said, what do you got? That was his thing. What do you got? So now let's assume that that's you. What would you do? Most Christians would melt, would shrivel, would walk away, I don't know what to do. See, I had no problem because I had a tool. I knew what tool to use, and I knew the tool would work. I would be very shocked if it didn't work. So I just looked at him, and I said, I'll tell you what, let me do. Give me just a few minutes here, and let me show you a little diagram. You can tell me whether you want to meet or not. Okay, tell me the diagram. Showed him the diagram. Within minutes, he says, so you don't mind meeting with me? Man, I tell you how much this means to me. If you, I know it. I mean, I know it's going to take you time, but are you okay? I really would appreciate it. And I said, well, I'm not going to meet with you unless you do this, this, and that. Oh, I'll do it all. I'll do it. What's it good? He did everything. I mean, to the T, couldn't ask for any more faithfulness. I had another lunch. I have the guys in my discipleship group. I have a group of guys that I mentor in their spiritual formation, and they're usually pretty young in their faith. And this one guy, young spiritually, and I said, everybody needs to bring somebody to lunch with me. You know, don't lie to them, but, you know, just tell them I'm your mentor, I'm your coach, life coach. I don't care, but just get them with me for lunch. And if you want to tell them I'm a preacher, that's fine too. But anything, this guy says, oh, I'll tell you, I know who God wants me to bring, but I don't want to bring him. I said, who? He's my future brother-in-law, and I don't like him. He doesn't like me. We don't want him in our family. So that's nice. And he says, and I said, well, we'll get him. Well, I don't really want him. I don't even know if I want him in heaven. I mean, I'm just like, oh. He says, we just don't click, you know, and da-da-da. I said, okay, bring him. So sure enough, he says, okay, we got it set up. We're gonna have lunch at a Mexican restaurant. I said, well, great. He said, no, don't say great, because it's not going to be good. It's going to be really bad. You don't know this guy. It's not going to be good. I said, that'll be good. So we get there. The two of them are already seated. I sit down next to my friend, and I look over. His name's John. I said, John, I said, I don't know much about you, but so-and-so, your future brother-in-law here, so you're getting married and so forth. Yep. Well, congratulations. I'm glad. He goes, Hey, look, can we just get this straight right now? Let's get this over with, okay? I'm a Baptist, okay? So I'm okay with God, right? I'm a Baptist. We good? Now, what would you do then? I look over at my friend, and he's like, oh, gosh. He said, I knew it. And I said, I knew I had the right tool for him. So I said, I tell you what, we'll just do one thing. Will you give me a minute and let me just show you something? He goes, yeah. He didn't want it. I said, okay, just look at this. And I showed him something for just a few minutes. Now, within minutes, he's going, oh, gosh, yeah, I really appreciate you doing this. Yeah, I'd love to meet with you, love to meet with you. Well, we get in our car. We set it up our time. We'd meet next week and so forth. And my buddy calls me. He's crying like a little boy, little baby. I mean, he's sobbing. I said, what? What's wrong? What happened? He said, no. He said, my sister just called me. And she said, what happened to John? John just called me, and he's all excited about meeting with a preacher. What happened? So I said to my buddy, I said, I need to ask you something. You saw everything that happened. You listened to everything. I want an honest answer. Did you see or hear me do anything that seemed amazing, intriguing, how I did that, outside the tool itself? Did you see me do anything very unusual or exceptional? You know what his answer was? No. Anybody could do what you just did. And that was the greatest news I could have ever heard. It wasn't, oh, look, I gifted. It was, wow, that the tool's really, I said, that's why I'm equipping you in these tools. That's why you're here to watch, because I can tell you about the tools, but you need to be equipped in those tools. So tools, you got to have tools in all three of those buckets. Once you get those, then you just look for where's the best place. Where's your workshop? Where's the best place? Is it where you live, work, or play? We should not eliminate any of the three, but we should find the primary and focus there. Go at that one hard, and that's when you become missional.
It's awesome. Thank you for sharing with us tonight. I want to make sure to respect your time, respect everybody else's time. So we'll wrap this portion. As you know, we'll have a little opportunity to do Q&A with Randy. If you're interested in doing that, you can hang around for a few minutes. You know, the timing just sort of worked out that we're doing Express Your Faith in a couple weeks here, which is our training seminar that Randy leads, just to help you learn how to do exactly what he was talking about, be able to sit with folks and do simple things to have gospel conversations. So October 7th, 7th and 8th, we're doing Express Your Faith here, and you need to go to, if you can throw the slide up, perimeter.org/express. That's how you would sign up for that. There it is. Excellent. That's how you would register. And so remember, if you do it here on campus.
Can I add too, mm-hmm. It's a Friday night through Saturday noon. So, but there is a podcast or there's a something you listen to that mm-hmm. I teach kind of a first little, the theory, the understanding, the biblical basis, right. All of that is online. So you listen to that before you come. So be sure you register early enough, and it will be closed out. I mean, typically, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be, you know, so if you want to go. You know.
Yeah,